Good morning. And it is morning, 9:12 in the morning, a.m., as they say, on Friday the 13th, January 13th, 2012. I've just recorded my introductory podcast for my class that starts next Tuesday. I'm going to continue this idea of podcasting to my class. The last class seemed to enjoy it a great deal, in part because it allows me to get short comments to them in a mode that they're not familiar with. And it helps, I think, to expand their horizons in terms of available tools. I also added a text to this course. Since we've got a full 15-week semester, three short books, didn't exactly lend itself very well to having a good, rounded experience. So rather than spend a month reading Cuban, for example, or Postman, which is their first book, I went and I looked for a book that was available as an ebook, and I stumbled across an ebook publication. If I remember, I think it's from the Pew Charitable Trust, on technology, communications, and education, which is the name of the course. So I assigned that book as well. It has the additional benefit of being free. So the book is free. The sticker and the little catch for the class is that it's an ebook. It's not available in print. I don't believe they can order it in paper. I'm requiring them to read it in an ebook format. We'll see how that works out. We'll see if anybody cheats it. But it's time that these people who have not yet visited some of these digital tools is required to play in the same culture that the rest of the country is. Too often there's a teacher culture that really focuses in on a very narrow pool of available resources. And particularly in graduate school, where most of what happens as a result of being part of a formal literature review of acceptable resources, and those resources are generally peer-reviewed journals. And most of the peer-reviewed journals aren't talking about what's going on now. They're talking about what was going on 3 years ago. Sorry, 3 years ago doesn't matter. 3 years ago is interesting from a historical standpoint. 3 years ago does not matter. From an education standpoint, what matters today? What matters is No Child Left Behind. What matters is the fact that the excellent schools are now starting to be closed under No Child Left Behind. Nobody's writing about that except Ravitch and a couple of others. So people need to be able to follow these conversations as they're unfolding. As a result, I've assigned them to each start a blog and start a Google Reader account and to subscribe to some of the more important educational feeds. Which reminds me, I need to put together some of the more important educational feeds as a list for them. I should be able to create a list in Google Reader and export it so that they can import it into their own Google Reader. That would be handy. I'm sure I can. It's just a question of how much work is it going to be to get those isolated out so I only share those links. And not all 300 links or whatever it is that's currently in my feed reader. So, yeah, it's a little bit later than I wanted. I couldn't leave. I got up this morning with the work before play mantra in my head. I have so much that has to get done today that I really needed to focus on what was going on, particularly with this class that's starting up. I got the word earlier in the week that the Blackboard shell was ready for me. What I didn't realize was that they had not rolled over last summer's course, but in fact had given me a brand new shell. not only is it a brand new shell, it's Blackboard 9, a Blackboard form, which I have never seen before. So I've got a little bit of a learning curve myself. I've been struggling with the text editor in it. It doesn't format the way the old one did, which makes life somewhat challenging, particularly for me, where I have some formatted text that I want to appear in a particular manner, and it doesn't really support it. So what I've had to do is go back to HTML and create clean HTML, not Microsoft HTML, that in fact is what I wanted to do. I've also had to reconstitute the calendar. Since the original calendar was for 15 weeks and 20 days, and this is a 15-week course plus 1 week of finals, I needed to go through and figure out what was going to happen in which week. Now, the first week is going to be basically plug-in. What I want them to do is to set up their blogs and set up their readers to listen to some initial podcasts, to get their book, their ebook, and read it. Because the pattern that I've given them is, at the end of the week, they should be reading. So that at the beginning of the week, we can start the week with a discussion question that I want them to discuss that week. And I've given them a question every week except for the last section for the book that I have only just assigned this morning. So that'll be a while. And I've got some time to review it myself and to ask some questions there. But I've had to go through and take some pretty specific questions based on individual chapters and kind of compress them, because I don't really want to give them three questions. I want to give them some big question kinds of writing prompts. The problem with giving everybody the same question, particularly if it's a fact-based question, is that everybody gets the same answer, and that doesn't do anyone any good when we come time to having to review each other's work, which is what they should be doing in the middle of the week, reviewing and commenting on each other's blogs, and having this kind of slow-motion discussion over the course of the week. So instead of one chapter a day, they get three chapters a week, more or less. I've divided each book into thirds. There are four units, each 3 weeks long, each with a set of readings, each with a writing prompt. There are a couple of extra assignments that they need to do because they need to do a presentation at the end of the class that's based on some research that they've done into a particular technology and its relationship with education and culture. And there is a list of suitable technologies. And inevitably, I have somebody who wants to do some other kind of technology. And I've made some exceptions in the past. So they haven't always turned out very well, but it's much more important that the student be engaged in a topic that they're interested in, or in a topic that I'm interested in a way that is of interest to them. So in my written assignment, they're given a writing prompt or some other question that's pertinent to their practice, and they can respond to that instead for the week. But I'm going to be rating those rather critically. Which reminds me, I need to go find that rubric, thank you. I need to go find the rubric for grading blog posts. It's one that a lot of them find difficult until they realize that they can get an A without taking really extraordinary steps. But they have to be consistent, they have to do every piece of work, and they have to do every piece of work very well. For 15 weeks, that's often a challenge for people. And missing a week, missing a two, is enough to drop you to a B. But one of the rubric items, the way to get the maximum points is to write something so well and so interesting that people outside the class comment on it. It's not as difficult as it sounds in this space, because a lot of people are interested in technology, education, and culture. And if you reference anything outside the class, like Stephen Downs's blog, or Alan Levine's blog, or Darcy Norman's blog, or Vicki Davis's blog, they're going to respond, and they're probably going to leave a comment. As long as they do, that's an automatic A for the week. So part of this is sort of a kind of a training ground for educational bloggers to help them understand not how to use the blog as a teacher, but to how to use the blog as a learner. So I'm really kind of looking forward to doing this class. It's going to take some time, but I think that structure might actually pay off. I know that I did a lot of work in the summer, or at least I did some work in the summer, while I was trying to teach this course. If I remember correctly, that was when I finally finished up doing the Steve Tem book, or very nearly. Anyway, I'm probably remembering that wrong, and I probably spent the entire summer not doing anything. Anyway, so that's the plan. I'm going to finish getting this course laid out for today so that I can send them all an email letting them know. I need to update my day zero post on my teaching blog. For those of you who are interested, it's durandus.com/Phaedrus, Phaedrus. If you've read much Plato, you'll know that Phaedrus was a student of Socrates. And I'm sure I've gone over this in this podcast previously, but for the new listeners, Phaedrus was a student of Socrates who introduced to his learning a new technology that Socrates abhorred as the end of modern civilization as he knew it. He wasn't too far off. But remember, Socrates existed in an oral tradition. The technology that Phaedrus introduced was a Greek innovation called writing. And Socrates allowed us how, with the advent of writing, where a man's words could be written down and read later by someone else, that the store of knowledge would cease to be internal to the individual, and man himself would have no way of understanding the world because he'd have no context, because he wouldn't have read everything that has been written. We recognize this kind of teacher obstacle as being quite old and quite new. It's still being applied to things like the computer, like internet. I still run into it occasionally in a classroom that has a problem with calculators and cell phones. Cell phones I can understand almost. Calculators, you know, it's not necessarily the right kind of approach. If you can look it up, you don't need to learn it. Approach is an interesting one, and one that is largely ignored in school because you can't test that way, or it's very difficult to test that way, and the test becomes somewhat moot. So what we need to be teaching kids is how to find the answers for themselves, not necessarily what all the answers are. The problem is that finding an answer often requires a certain amount of innate knowledge. You have to know what field you're looking for. You have to know something about what you're doing. Otherwise, what you're doing is casting about in the dark, and you may or may not fall onto it. For example, in brewing beer, the mass that is used into which the yeast is placed is called a wort, W-O-R-T. In winemaking, it's called a must, M-U-S-T. In cider making, I have no idea. I don't know if it's a wort. Probably not, because wort has to do with boiled grain. Is it a must? It might be, since grape juice and apple juice really only vary by the nature of the fruit. Is hard apple cider actually apple wine? I think you could classify that, if you classify wine as fruit juice that has had yeast added. I don't know. But I have enough of a grounding in the field to be able to kind of give an extra educated guess about where to go to look to try to find out more. Likewise, somebody who's trying to find out phases of the moon and doesn't know that the moon's change in shape is called a phase might have some difficulty. It's probably a bad example. But the point remains that, not to get too sucked down that rabbit hole, the point remains that a certain amount of knowledge is a useful thing and helps to streamline the searching process, helps to streamline the process by which one finds answers. And so having some background in, for example, Shakespearean literature when trying to deal with screenwriting, there's a lot of informative practice there. Trying to write stories, not knowing which story Shakespeare has written, kind of hampers you. Goes back to genre writing as well. You don't know what Isaac Asimov wrote. You might think that you've got a great story about a robot. But without the appropriate antecedent, it might be a great story about a robot. But without the antecedent, without knowing Isaac Asimov, without knowing the three laws, without at least knowing that the three laws exist, even if that you can't recite them offhand, like I don't think I could right now, but I could certainly find them pretty quickly. If you didn't know that he wrote iRobot, then one of the seminal influences for your story is missing. And if that influence is missing, then that story exists somewhat at odds. It's an interesting idea. Can it be as valid? Can it be as valuable? Does iRobot inform all other robot stories? Does Stanislav Lem and his collection of short stories inform all of us now, even though they did not necessarily inform Asimov at the time? I have to go check those dates, because I think Lem, who's writing in, what is it, Polish? Russian? Polish. Was writing in Polish before Asimov was writing. It seems like it's not hard to believe. I wonder if they were contemporaries. Asimov goes back a long way. He goes back to the 40s, I want to say the early 40s. He was one of the original science fiction writers. People call me prolific. He wrote so much more, so much faster. Anyway, so we're in for some interesting times. I now have two podcasts I need to produce this morning. I'm going to see if I can remember to get through the entire production process before I turn to the next task on my list. Yesterday, I got halfway done and then wandered off to do something, and then never came back until Tara Lee, thank you, Tara Lee, reminded me with an email that I hadn't published. Yeah, not only hadn't I published, I hadn't tagged it, I hadn't uploaded it to Bluehost, nothing. Oh, well. Anyway, I'm at the back gate, and tomorrow's another day. I'll talk to you then.